naval warfighters now have a new technology to help them face a growing body of new threats. Peter Morrison and his team built a laser weapon system. It is faster to install and safer and cheaper to use than other missiles. The Navy says each laser costs them less than a dollar a shot. Morrison is a program officer at the Navy's Office of Naval Research and a finalist for a Service to America Medal in the National Security and International Affairs category. Peter, thank you very much for coming on the program today. Congratulations on your selection as a finalist. Tell me about the weapon that you and your team developed and how you went about doing it. Welcome to the program, Peter.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So we worked on what is called a solid state laser. It's a technology that uses light energy to be able to form a collimated beam of energy, a very thin pencil beam, much like a laser pointer that you see, except at much, much higher powers, many, many times in orders of magnitude higher in power, that we can take and aim at a threat that may be coming at our ships, and we need to defend against those type of threats. We can see it with a camera that's co-boresighted with that laser system and then be able to defeat it at long ranges, as you mentioned, for a dollar a shot. And the reason we can do that for a dollar a shot is because we use the electricity that's on the ships that already exist. So we're doing it with electricity, not expensive propellants or dangerous chemicals, explosives, that would be on a ship. So we literally... we eliminate and we get off gunpowder completely.
Is the higher power or the higher concentration of power what transforms the beam of light into a kinetic force?
It is. So what happens is you take light and you create you take the electricity and you create light from that with light-emitting diodes. You see a lot of new light bulbs coming out with this technology. It's very, very efficient. And you put it through what's called a laser media or gain media, and that creates that column of light, which is extremely bright and extremely intense, and it puts it in a focused column. So it's going only in one direction, and it goes out at the speed of light and goes to the target directly. So we can literally point it very, very precisely at a target at long, long distances and be able to interact with that target in a very specific way so that we destroy what it is we want to destroy, what we actually can see that we want to destroy with a camera, as I mentioned, that was co-boresighted, and be able to see that in real time and defeat those threats as they might be coming in against our ships and against our men.
I apologize if I'm oversimplifying this to the point of insult, but this sounds like the old take a magnifying glass and focus sunlight on an ant to about the 9,000 millionth degree.
Somewhat. It's very, very similar in that you're taking light energy, which comes from the sun, and we focus it down onto that target. So it's very much like that magnifying glass, the part of the beam director or the telescope that is used with the camera, again, to focus that beam of light is much like a magnifying glass. So it actually focuses at the target. That's the big important part, is the energy gets focused on the target in a very precise point.
You mentioned that this is not dependent on ordnance aboard either an aircraft or a ship. What difference does that make for the safety of the sailors that are working with this weapon system?
So it makes two big important differences to the sailors on the ships. One, it reduces the hazard. So they have to be able to man that equipment. They have to move the missiles and the guns, the ordnance around, and be able to resupply it. And so that's a very hazardous aspect, the chemicals and the ordnance, the explosives that go along with those are dangerous, and they require special handling. And should they catch fire, they can explode, or otherwise they are by their very nature dangerous materials, and they have to be treated special ways. By using this electrical energy, we eliminate all those propulsive materials and explosives from that train of being able to get the effect we want. The second thing that it does is it also allows us to be able to use that chemical energy that's in fuel, convert it over into electrical power and then into that beam of light. And that's almost like an endless supply. We have a near endless supply of that ammunition at $1 a shot. So we can keep shooting without having to have a complete magazine. So it continues and can be regenerated by the electrical power on the ship that we're using and creating from that fuel oil that's on the ship. So it's actually an extremely beneficial thing in two ways. One, it's nearly a limitless magazine. And two, we eliminate all the gunpowder and explosives off the ships today that are a hazard to it.
There's a tremendous supply chain implication there, too. I mean, it sounds to me like the only supply that's necessary to replenish is the fuel that's needed to power the ship in the first place.
And that's often the big game changer here, is that it's not just that you're getting rid of the need. The laser system in itself can actually help some of those weapon systems. So we get to a point where it actually reduces the load requirements and it reduces the manning requirements and it reduces the need to have to re-come back to port more as often, especially when we're dealing with numerous threats all coming in at once. If we're talking about a very low-cost threat that's coming at us, this is a very low-cost way to be able to deal with it, as opposed to throwing a million-dollar or multi-million-dollar missile at it, or tens-of-thousand-dollar projectile at it.
Peter Morrison's a program officer at the Navy Department's Office of Naval Research. He's a Service to America Medal finalist in the National Security and International Affairs category. I note in the description of your selection to be a finalist, Peter, from the Partnership for Public Service, they mention one element that I thought was interesting, kind of as an aside. The laser weapon, which is operated by a video game-like controller, offers new levels of precision and speed for naval warfighters. That controller concept to me is fascinating because I recall when the idea of using controllers like that first came around, there was a little bit of apprehension or reticence maybe among some of the old line folks about whether we should be doing it this way. And the more I thought about it, the more logical it sounded, because that's what your cohort of potential operators is familiar with. Am I on the right track, Peter?
You are exactly on the right track, and that's actually why we picked it. And you're right in that when we first started rolling this out, we had some of the more experienced trainers and others saying, no, we're used to the older keyboards and the joystick systems, and you can kind of think of that as sort of the generation who grew up with Missile Command. They kind of learned on those sort of systems. The newer generation, the younger officers and sailors that are going out, they are much more used to some of the game box type controllers, and those sort of systems become natural to them. So when we put those in their hands, they're actually able to feel more comfortable with them and be able to react with them because they've already been innately trained on the video games and otherwise. So it's actually quicker for them to pick up, and they start going through it much faster than some of the older, more experienced operators. And the great thing about this is they're even faster than some of our laser physicists. We took and reduced the load that used to require multiple laser physicists to be sitting at a control station. Now we've got it down to one sailor. One sailor can control this system, and he is a military officer who's gone through military training, and we've given him a tool that he can really use and take advantage of.
So it's not like the old days where you bring on a gunner and the gunnery team fires up a weapon, but they're at kind of lower levels, lower ranks. These are people with very high levels of training, in addition and separated from operating the laser system.
They are specially trained, and they get real understanding of how this weapon system, this new technology works, and they just marry up to it. They understand it, and we've actually listened to them. So as part of our management and building process, our technology maturation process, and our quick reaction capability that we put out, we listened to that feedback. That was really important, to listen to what the sailor had to say and then be able to put that back into the system to make sure that it was working the way they felt comfortable and it was natural for them to use.
One final note from the partnership's description of your selection, Peter. Frank Peterkin says, Morrison was instrumental in the success of the project, effectively making the case why lasers are necessary for future warfare, helping convince leaders to fund the program, managing cost and performance, keeping it on schedule, using his engineering expertise. Was there a point where this was a hard sell? I know hindsight is 20/20, but to listen to you describe it now, it sounds like a no-brainer. I imagine that wasn't always the case.
It wasn't. And so when we were dealing with this first, I coined a phrase that rings true in a lot of different venues. Innovation, true innovation, should expect skepticism. And part of that's because change, when you start going and you're offering up change, people are naturally skeptical. So what you have to do is expect that skepticism to come out, and you should be ready to educate people. So a lot of our job was, this is a brand new technology. Not too many people understood it. So we had to take the time and explain it to them so that they could understand the mechanisms of it, the way it's working, the way it may have different ways of being able to be used. So it had advantages and also some disadvantages. We knew that there would be things that wouldn't work quite as well as other technologies. So we wanted to make it clear and honest and educational as we came through. So we had to take that skepticism and take those skeptics and turn them into advocates. And we did that through education.
Did you find that this was a little bit different than maybe other innovative areas in government where that transformation, that education has to happen? Because you had the added perceptual layer of this being science fiction technology and not something that could potentially be real this soon.
And that was part of it. We had a science fiction aspect that you read about it in the comic books and they go, oh, yeah, that's really nice. Now, kind of go away and do something else with your time. And the truth of the matter was, we had to convince them this was real. In some cases, we would hand them pieces of steel with holes cut through them by lasers to explain to them, no, this is real. This is not science fiction. It's now science fact. The fact has come through the maturation of the technology. We've proven it, and it's ready to go out and be fielded and be useful to defend our sailors and officers.
I congratulate you on your accomplishments and those of your entire team. I know that none of the Service to America Medal finalists that I talk to ever claim individual success. So to you and your colleagues, congratulations, and look forward to tracking the final selection at the ceremony in September. Thank you very much for your time today, Peter.
You're welcome. Thank you.